This is an iHeart podcast.
Terrorism. Every single American knows about terrorism. And what do you think about when you think about terrorism? Do you think about jihadis, Islamic Jihad? You know, we lived through 9/11, the ISIS years, Iraq, Afghanistan. You think about suicide vests and things like that. That's what we think. We think terrorism. Me too. It's the first thing that pops into your head. But let's get down to the nitty-gritty of it, because we have an entirely different kind of terrorism going on right now, and it's going to continue going on. Terrorism is simply, as the name suggests, the use of terror to pursue political goals or religious goals. There are people all over the planet who don't have a respect for human life. And once you strip that away from somebody, once a human being, any human being, once they stop being someone created by God, it's a sacred soul, it's a human being, once they're not that, then why wouldn't you hurt them? Why wouldn't you kill them, threaten them? Once you strip that humanity away from people, that's what you do. Now, here in the United States of America, we have the Democrat Party. They are communists. Their street animals are communists. Their street enforcers are communists. And here's how it works. It has worked this way for a while, probably 20, 25 years in this country. And it's going to be bad for the foreseeable future. Elite communists, I'm talking about Democrats in the media and Democrat politicians, they understand they have a rabid base willing to hurt people because they're a bunch of animals and demons, and they give them orders. And they've been doing this over and over and over and over and over again. They program them, no different than a jihadi is programmed. You know, die for Allah, die for Allah, die for Allah. Here's a suicide vest. Programmed over and over and over and over and over again. Well, Democrats, they've been calling you Nazi, Gestapo, white supremacists over and over and over and over and over again for 10 years. And we roll our eyes and we say that's not true. And we say I'm not racist. And we say I'm not Hitler. And we tell them it's ridiculous. But they're not saying that for your sake. They're not talking to you when they call you a Nazi. They're talking to the demons that make up the Democrat base. Your liberal Aunt Peggy, she thinks you're a Nazi. She thinks Donald Trump is a Nazi, a Russian agent. But beyond her, right, that's the basic Democrat. That's the normal Democrat. If you keep going down and down and down, how many are pilled out of their minds? Remember the polls we've cited over and over again about how pilled out and have already been told they have mental health issues Democrats are? Now let's go to the internet, where terrorist cells meet, not just jihadi terrorist cells, where these communist terrorist cells meet, they communicate with each other, they talk about killing people, I want him to die, we should kill him, should we kill him? I think I'll kill him, over and over and over again, and this has been happening for years. These people have been programmed to believe they're fighting against Nazis, and Democrats give them orders, and they interpret those things as orders, because that's what they are, and they march out, and they hurt people. I'm going to play something for you, something we played for you many times before on this show, but I want you to listen very, very closely. Jaya Powell is a congresswoman from Washington State. She's a committed communist, fairly open about it. But she lays out, quite frankly, what the plan is. And you'll notice, she's going to say strike ready and street ready, and you've heard these terms. That's not the most important part of what she's about to say. She talks about risk tolerance. We have to figure out what our risk tolerance is. And as things get more dire, then we have to have more risk tolerance. What's she saying? Hey, I know maybe you don't want to get arrested. I know maybe you're hesitant to hurt someone or kill someone, but we're fighting against Nazis now. We don't have time for any more hesitation. You may have heard this interview and dismissed it. You may have heard it and thought it was nothing. But that communist animal on the internet, he heard this, and he heard marching orders.
We might call this getting strike ready. I think of it as getting us strike ready or street ready. And part of that is understanding our own strength, and as we develop that strength, being able to assess our risk tolerance, because we know that risk tolerance increases as the severity of the situation increases and as our own understanding of what's happening increases. So overall, the more we understand what's effective, what the risks are, and who's ready to participate, the more impact we can.
You heard what she said. And look, I pointed her out, but in the interest of fairness, they all talk this way. Chuck Schumer is telling people to reap the whirlwind. Joe Biden got up in front of the entire country and told them that Republicans were a threat to the very foundations of democracy. Every single talking head on CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, Washington Post, 10 years of calling you Nazi, Nazi, Nazi. What has happened is it has created terror cells in this country, no different than jihadi terror cells. They're in Portland, they're in New York City, they're all across the United States of America, oftentimes drugged out, sexually deviant monsters, and they believe they're in a fight with Nazis. They're in a war. That's what they believe. And they've already killed, and they're going to kill again. And I'm sorry, I know that's very hard to hear, but they're going to keep killing people. We can win this fight. But we better understand that's what we're dealing with and why we're dealing with it. And by the way, before we go to Jerry Dunleavy, just know they're not sorry. I'm talking about elected Democrats. They know what their rhetoric does. They're not going to tone it down because they want this to happen. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We'll go to Jerry next. ...20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days. That sounds like something you would hear from the local tea clinic. I know you have one. There's one on every 5 feet around here. But what does that mean? Well, there, you're going to get a needle jammed in your arm. Do you think you should do that? I'm talking about natural herbal supplements. Clinically tested. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. You are going to have so much more energy than you have now without a needle in your arm. Your brain is going to work better. Your mood is going to be better, all without a needle in your arm. Natural herbal supplements, a male vitality stack from Chalk, will change your entire life. Ladies, you are not forgotten. They have female vitality stacks for you. Do you want to be full of pep at the end of the day, ready to go instead of dragging your butt through the kitchen? Chalk.com/JesseTV.
You understand that it was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man.
I don't think there's anything funny about it.
I posted a message on Instagram on the day he was killed, sending love to his family and asking for compassion, and I meant it, and I still do. Nor was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make, but I understand that to some that felt either ill-timed or unclear, or maybe both. And for those who think I did point a finger, I get why you're upset. If the situation was reversed, there's a good chance I'd have felt the same way. I have many friends and family members on the other side who I love and remain close to, even though we don't agree on politics at all. I don't think the murderer who shot Charlie Kirk represents anyone.
Yeah, that was all a lie. He said what he said. We all saw it. And we all know why he did it. Joining me now, Jerry Dunleavy, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Just the News, one of the real great ones out there. So, Jerry, I guess we can skip past all the lying and crocodile tears and get down to, why do you think Jimmy Kimmel blamed it on the right to begin with? Did he believe it? Is he one of the dirtballs who knew he was lying? Where would he even get this idea?
Tough to get into someone's head, but what I can say for sure is that Jimmy Kimmel is likely the kind of person who was hanging out in the information space of the left. And as I laid out in a story that I did with dozens and dozens of examples of prominent leftists, this was something that a large number of prominent people on the left either fully believed or were happy to peddle to their followers. And what they were pushing was a baseless conspiracy theory that the assassin who murdered Charlie Kirk was a right-winger, and not just any right-winger, but a follower of the far-right and anti-Semitic Nick Fuentes. Now, what evidence did they have for this? None. They never did. There was never a shred or scintilla of evidence. And in fact, every piece of evidence from the very day of the shooting and onward was that this was someone motivated by left-wing ideology. We have the ammunition with inscriptions, "Hey, fascist, catch." Bella Chow, a purportedly anti-fascist song written on some of the ammunition, and on and on. And then, of course, him admitting to his family that he had done this because he believed that Charlie Kirk was hateful, and admitting to his boyfriend who believed that he is transitioning from male to female, admitting to his boyfriend that he did this because Charlie Kirk was hateful. Now, of course, there's nothing more hateful than assassinating someone over their views. And of course, Charlie Kirk was not a particularly hateful guy at all. He went to college campuses and debated people in good faith. But this conspiracy theory, I can't emphasize enough how deep this was on the left. On Blue Sky, on Twitter, you had New York Times reporters, members of Congress, writers for The Atlantic, all sorts of people, big names and big accounts, all pushing this. Some of them, I think, deceitfully, and some of them, I think, actually believed it, because that is the, to use their, you know, favorite terminology, that is the disinformation space that they are steeped in and that they live in.
Jerry, I'm glad you brought up the New York Times. I mean, you can look at headlines from NBC News. This is the problem with this world of make-believe these people live in. It's not just a couple tranny freaks on Reddit in Blue Sky. It's the thought of, even if you think they're biased, these huge news organizations peddle the same lies you see in the deepest, darkest corners of the internet. So if you're just a normal Democrat, you believe so many things that are simply not true.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, in one sense, obviously, you blame, some people bear responsibility for believing things that aren't true. But, you know, like I said, you had reporters and editors and contributors for The Atlantic who had bought into this totally baseless conspiracy theory that Charlie Kirk's assassin was, you know, a far-right groiper rather than what he was, a leftist who wanted to kill Charlie Kirk because he thought Charlie Kirk was the hateful one. You had writers for the New York Times who had convinced themselves that it was so overwhelmingly obvious that the shooter was right-wing that people on the right were going to stop talking about Charlie Kirk's assassination. They were saying this. They had clearly convinced themselves, or somehow wanted to convince their audiences, that it was so obviously true that the shooter was right wing that people on the right were going to stop talking about it. Obviously, that hasn't happened, in part because I don't think people would stop talking about it whether the shooter was from the right or the left, because lots of people just care about the truth. But people haven't stopped talking about it because it's so obvious that the shooter was motivated by left-wing ideology and a hatred for Charlie Kirk. But this was these are big name people from prominent places. I encourage people to read the article. It's one of the more thorough things that I've done. And when I say that there are dozens and dozens of examples, I'm not exaggerating. And I wasn't like scraping the bottom of the barrel of the internet trying to find, you know, random people with no followers. These are prominent people, prominent left-wing influencers, and prominent left-wing reporters and think makers that were spreading this conspiracy theory. So what I'm saying is, it's no surprise that it made it all the way to Jimmy Kimmel. Whether he was pushing a lie knowingly or just believed it because the rest of the people that are around him believed it, you know, it's hard to say. But, you know, this is a conspiracy theory that has taken hold on the left, And a large number of people on the left are going to believe this conspiracy theory for a long time, unfortunately.
Again, I want to remind you that he is Jerry Dunleavy with Just the News. And I actually want you to go read this article very much, because I talk to you all the time about the world of make-believe these communists live in. If you want to see the bricks in the mortar and how that world gets built, go read the article. It's fascinating. I dug into it. It's fascinating. It's the nitty-gritty detail of why your kooky liberal Aunt Peggy believes Donald Trump is a Russian agent. Jerry, speaking of the left, the Biden administration worked very, very hard. In fact, everyone on the left, the media as well, for a very long time to brand right-wingers as domestic terrorists, up to and including lying about data. You dug into this. What'd you find?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination and with all of the politically motivated violence that's happening right now, a lot of it from the left, you would hope that we would have a firm, you know, data set to get our arms around, to figure out what is going on, what's the accuracy of the threat picture in the United States, and where are domestic terrorism threats coming from? And I would want that. I want to know where the threats are coming from the right. I want to know where the threats are coming from the left. But unfortunately, the Biden administration spent 4 years muddling that picture deliberately. And one of the ways that they did it, and I know this for a fact based on declassified documents that we only now are getting our hands on, that part of how they distorted the domestic terrorism threat picture is that without telling us that they had done this, they inflated the right-wing terrorism, domestic terrorism threat by counting thousands, and I'm telling you, more than 1,000, probably closer to 2,000, and maybe more than 2,000 instances of arrests and cases tied to the Capitol riot of January 6th, counted those each individually as an instance of domestic terrorism, and then used that to say that right-wing domestic terrorism threat was on the rise. But they didn't tell us that they were doing that with 6 cases. So they weren't out there saying, look, we're taking every single January 6th case that we've opened and we're counting it as right-wing domestic terrorism, and that's why we're saying that right-wing terrorism is on the rise. No, they just told us that right-wing terrorism was on the rise without telling us how they had arrived at that conclusion. And when you dig into it, you actually see that 61% of the domestic terrorism cases as of February 2022 were all directly tied to January 6th. So 61% of the domestic terrorism cases that the FBI had opened were tied to January 6th. 78% of the domestic terrorism arrests that were made in 2021 were tied to the Capitol riot. And they didn't really tell us, though, that they were using those January 6th numbers to pad the stats on this domestic terrorism threat problem. And then, of course, we saw what they did with that. They gravely expanded the power of the federal government to look into so-called reported domestic terrorism. They expanded the powers, of course, like using a letter from the National School Boards Association, which called upon labeling parents as domestic terrorists, to launch a DOJ investigations, and all sorts of other things that the Biden administration, the Biden DOJ, did based on this sort of original sin of using the Capitol riot to pad those stats and then label right-wing domestic terrorism as this massive threat. And unfortunately now, after 4 years of the Biden administration, when we're seeing serious left-wing violence, of course, this year, seeing it with the assassination of Charlie Kirk, attacks on ICE and all of this stuff, but also seeing it the last 4 years, the last 8 years, we do not have an accurate and trustworthy data set to rely upon to determine where these threats are coming from. So the FBI currently is going to be back at square one, is going to have to go back and redo all of this because of the purposefully muddled threat picture that the Biden DOJ and FBI and intelligence community put together.
Jerry, before I let you go, it's more than chatter. We're hearing this from the Counterterrorism Center. Al-Qaeda on the rise, plotting things. You wrote the book, amazing book, about our withdrawal from Afghanistan, Kabul. Tell me what you know.
Well, Al-Qaeda was never fully defeated in Afghanistan. And the Taliban never, not before 9/11, not when we were threatening to invade, not after we invaded, and not after 20 years of war, and not after we left, the Taliban never was willing to give up its alliance with Al-Qaeda and to give up protecting Al-Qaeda. So Al-Qaeda is still a threat. It does have training and operational space in Afghanistan under the Taliban. And what's important to keep in mind about Al-Qaeda is it doesn't just operate in Afghanistan. It has very effectively managed to survive and reconstitute in many ways. It is a significant challenge and threat. Iterations of Al-Qaeda are a significant challenge and threat in Africa, in places like Yemen. Al-Qaeda's outfit in the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is potent. And Al-Qaeda has not given up on its goal and strategy, which is big, grand terrorist attacks aimed at the West and the United States. ISIS-K is a little bit more opportunist as compared to Al-Qaeda. ISIS-K will attack where it can and when it can. Al-Qaeda is a bit more patient and likes the big, spectacular attacks. And it has a safe haven in Afghanistan under Taliban rule, and it's operational in Al-Qaeda and in the Middle East. I think that the threat is very real, but it was very good to see Joe Kent and the National Counterterrorism Center and Tulsi Gabbard highlight this threat, because I do think that it's a serious one. All of us, of course, are talking about domestic terrorism right now. I think rightly so. There's obviously some domestic terrorism threat from the right. There's a huge growing problem of it on the left. But you don't want to forget about the Islamic and jihadist terrorism threat as well around the world and here in the United States, because it's serious. Al-Qaeda and ISIS-K are not defeated. We have killed a lot of their different leaders. We have done a lot of things to try to tamp down on them. But we lost the war in Afghanistan. There's no other way to put it. We retreated. We withdrew in chaos. The Taliban took over, and Al-Qaeda is still protected by them. So this is a challenge that we're going to continue to face.
Jerry, you are the best, my man. Come back soon. All right. We're going to talk to a former NYPD detective next. You know what we have behind our stove? Probably the exact same thing you have behind your stove. Salt, pepper, olive oil. It's every kitchen you go into. Salt, pepper, olive oil. But here's the problem. We just grab a bottle of olive oil from the grocery store. That's all I've ever done. I'm 44. That's all I've ever done for about 43 years of my life. You go down the grocery aisle. When you're out, you only wait until you're out, right? Because it never goes bad. Have you thought about that? Have you ever looked at the date on the olive oil sitting behind your stove? When you buy it, it's old. Months old. Sometimes years old. Go to farmfresh246.com. Get one bottle. It's free. By the way, it's free. You pay like a buck to cover the shipping. Get one bottle. What is it? It's fresh from a farm. It's so much more flavorful. You've been eating bland olive oil and had no idea. Farmfresh246.com.
Arguably the fastest rising star right now in Democratic politics is Zohran Mamdani, who is going to be elected mayor of New York City and probably in a landslide as a sort of talent spotter in the Democratic Party. Yeah. What do you think of him and his candidacy? And what do you think of mainline Democratic shyness and agitation about the prospect that he's going to win?
Look, as far as I'm concerned, he's the Democratic nominee and he should be supported.
Do you endorse his candidacy?
I support the Democrat in the race.
Sure.
That's great. I hope my beloved New York City is not going to make the biggest mistake ever, but I fear they're going to. Joining me now, Bo Dietl, host of One Tough Podcast, retired NYPD detective. Gosh, that's freaking cool. Bo, please tell me that New York City is not going to vote for this monster.
Let me tell you something. I'm the only one that put together a PAC, Political Action Pact, there. And it's nycabm.com, New York City, anybody but Mamdani. There is none of the candidates are going after Mamdani. They're going after each other like jerks instead of focusing on the problem. And Mamdani is the problem. I've been doing my own homework. The other day what I did was I hit the streets. First stop was Times Square. He wants to put mentally ill people in abandoned storefronts. Gives them real good accessibility to the trains so they can push people in there and they can beat people up, the mentally ill. Then I made my way up to Harlem where we had a grandma that was shot by a stray bullet by a bunch of gangs on 113 and Lenox. I did another video up there. He wants to get rid of the gang lists as far as the database. He wants to do everything to destroy our city. Then I went up to the South Bronx. He wants a freeze on rents. I remember the 1970s, punk Mamdani. I remember when they got rid of it. They become abandoned buildings. Maybe that's where you want to go. People are not realizing anything. Now I'm looking at the fundraising. I'm talking about tens of millions of dollars being funneled through from out of this country, including the in-country. People like that fat pig, Soros, giving all this money. All they're doing, you wonder why his poll numbers ain't changing. He had 100,000 people on the streets knocking on doors. With all this money he has, I estimate he had raised more than $50 million. That's why this punk is going, and nobody's going to touch him because he's raising all this money. I heard, you remember, I got appointed on the Homeland Security Council by the president. I heard there was investigations going on as far as with out-of-this-country contributions into his campaign. This is a big... this is such an unbelievable thing. What's going on? This is becoming the wave like what happened in England. They got 50 towns, including are controlled by these socialists, communist son of a guns. And this is going to sweep across our country if this punk gets elected in New York City. That's how I really feel about it.
Well, that's certainly, I agree. But why would New York, even with all the money, why would New York City? I know New York City's, but they suffered from de Blasio. They've picked horrible mayors before and suffered so greatly. How could they ever choose someone like this?
Well, the most important thing now, my child and my daughter are Jewish, and my ex-wife is a Russian Jew. So I guess I'm a Jew by marriage. But here's the deal. How about 65% of the New York Jewish people voted for this creep when he comes out and he says he's anti-Semitic? He doesn't recognize Israel. He doesn't recognize the fact if the prime minister of Israel comes to New York, he wants him locked up. I tell you what, punk, you're the one that's going to get locked up. I got my craw with this guy. All he does is smile. And follow him where he came from. Came from Uganda, from a rich family. He couldn't run a damn Kool-Aid stand. Now you want to give him a $115 billion budget? This is a little punk fool who can't even hold a job. He was an assemblyman for 2 terms. He never even voted. All he does is that cutesy-utsy smile. And you know what they're doing? They're raping the minds of our children on Instagram,
TikTok, and they're going to them. Oh, he's going to give you free everything. He's going to give you free buses. He's going to give you free rents. He's going to give you free food. He's going to give you food. This is a punk that has to be beat in this election. When are people going to wake up? And that's what I do with my, and I implore people, support NYCABM.com. I will continue to the last day of the election to let people realize, what are you doing? Why isn't there no counterattacks from these other candidates against Mondumi here? All they do is attack each other. How about attacking him?
Why isn't Cuomo getting more traction, Bo? Is it got, I mean, the Cuomo family's royalty in New York, governor this, governor that. Is it lingering COVID anger? Why not Cuomo?
You know, I look, if I have to vote for Cuomo, I'll vote for Cuomo over Mondumi. I love Curtis Sliwa. You know, I don't know, people say he can't win, but here's the deal. What do we vote for? I'd rather vote for an honest person, which the most honest out of all of them, Eric Adams is a criminal. He's a thief. I went through this thing with the migrant monies. There's all kinds of hundreds of millions of dollars. No bid contract. Nobody wants to talk about it. Eric Adams is finished. Bye-bye. And I told the president, why are you pardoning this guy? There is $7 billion of no bid contracts that went through New York City. Why did all his top lieutenants, all in January, leave? Remember that Shaggy, that guy, what was it, me? They all left because when they get indicted on taking money from the city, the mayor, Eric Adams, could go, it wasn't me. That's bull crap. He's gone. Now you got Cuomo. And I tell you the honest truth, his problem is he doesn't know how to be compassionate. He doesn't know how to go to the people and say, you know what? I screwed up as governor. I passed these stupid bail reforms. I let all the cop killers go. I was wrong, but I love New York City and I love America. I want to be your mayor and show you my contrition of what I did wrong. Please give me a chance, because he ain't got it in. When I used to punch people out, I used to say to them after I was finished, you know, I'm sorry you made me break your jaw, but you made me do it. I'm sorry. He can't say I'm sorry.
Bo, what would this mean for the NYPD, Mamdani becoming mayor?
Oh. Well, here's the deal with this. The problem here is the NYPD is not proactive anymore. They're afraid to get involved. The other day when I went up to Lenox Avenue, 113th Street, with a film crew, when I'm doing these videos about anti-Mondami, that gang was on the corner of Lenox Avenue and 113th. This is the same gang where shots came out and killed a grandmother, Mama Zell. A stray bullet killed her. I walked right into them. They looked at me like I was nuts. I said, you know, I'm doing a video here about the killing of this grandma over here. One of the stray bullets came. It came from a gang fight. I'm not saying you guys are the gang. Definitely it was the gang. Every one of them stood fast. And they looked at me. They said to themselves, this guy's got to be either a psychopath or he needs to be incarcerated. He walked right into 12 gang members. Their faces all dropped, were cold and stoned. And I know killers when I see them. I locked up a lot of them. These were bad guys. I walked away and I said to myself, I challenged my own mind. I'm saying, Bo, why are you walking into these badass gang members here? And you know, at any time, I knew there was at least 3-4 guns there. And, you know, this is what it is. They have open rein. Nobody's going up there. Years ago, I would have called in the anti-crime guys and said, come on, meet me over here. Let's go after this gang. And I guarantee you we would have taken 4 guns out, and maybe one of those guns would have been a murder weapon that would have killed somebody. There's no proactivity. They get no support from this moron city council liberal thing. You can't get a guy in a headlock. How did they get off so without on top? Who told me that? So the cops don't want. Now, if they get sued, which they could get sued. They could take their home away that they've been putting money in, their pensions, they lose their job. And you wonder why cops are not reacting and why they're not doing it. That poor cop that was shot on Park Avenue and killed was working overtime because the lousy salary they start him with, below $50,000, you couldn't even eat hamburger helper. These poor cops have to work second, third jobs, and then they don't get no support on top of it. You got watchdogs watching this, this watching that. Then you got a DA Bragg, that fat pig in Manhattan. All he's looking is to take the cops down. You know what? The criminals become the good guys and the cops are the bad guys. And you know what? We see it across the country with what's going on with ICE, and I'm involved with Homeland Security. I was appointed by the president on the Homeland Security Advisory Council, and these poor ICE guys are out there trying to get these criminal illegals off our streets, and they're getting beat up, they're getting spat on, their families are getting terrorized. Man, this country's going wrong. We got to straighten out, and I think New York City's got to be the water. We got to take this guy down, Mondami. If we lose New York City, I promise you, this will be a blanket effect. And next they're going to run, AOC will run for president of the United States. And you know what? She could possibly win. And then you know what's going to happen? They'll take the Congress. And you know what's going to happen? They'll try to indict my President Trump. They'll probably try to indict me too. But this is where we're going. We got to stop it.
Bo, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. All right. We have more. Next. I love my cell phone company. You know what I like? Here's what I like. I like never having to worry that a company I patronize is going to take my money and use it against me. Because it's a concern everywhere. You know that, right? When you go buy a new car, you know you're going to have an LGBTQ ad the next day, and you're going to think, well, I paid for that ad. You know what's coming in this crappy corporate environment we have. I never have to check on Pure Talk. I never have to pull up their social media. Oh, I hope it's not Pride Month for them. Pure Talk cares about America. They hire Americans. Their CEO did 2 tours in Vietnam. They charge you way less for your cell phone service. You can keep your phone, you can keep your number, and more importantly, you can patronize a business that loves this country. When they give back, they get veterans back on their feet. They give out American flags at Independence Day. My kind of company. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Go. Switch today. When we talk about terrorism, we think about, you know, bombs and suicide vests and planes flying into buildings, and of course all that stuff is absolutely dreadful. But what we don't think about is the quiet things, the quiet, slow, subversive things. They're just as damaging, in many cases more damaging. Joining me now, Stephen W. Mosier, author of the book, I certainly hope you've read it by now, The Devil and Communist China. Stephen, please help me understand, because when people say terrorism, they may think Antifa or a bunch of jihadis, but it will take a long time for me to get to someone who talks about China. Why would I talk about China?
Oh, I think we got to start with China, because China is behind all kinds of terrorist attacks on the United States, both directly and through surrogates. You want to talk about Antifa, the riots back in 2020. The Houston Chinese consulate was encouraging people to join the rioters and actually bringing in undercover agents from China under diplomatic cover to help provoke those demonstrations. That's terrorism. We now know Antifa is going to be a terrorist organization, is a terrorist organization, and is going to be tracked as such. Let's talk about fentanyl. Fentanyl is you know, chemical terrorism against the American population. And the labs wouldn't exist without the precursors that come from China. The cartels in northern Mexico wouldn't be able to fund their activities without help from China's banks in laundering the money. And it's not just Mexico, of course. The biggest fentanyl lab in North America is located up in British Columbia, which also has a large population of communist Chinese being very active in our northern border country of Canada. And who can forget the COVID biological warfare, which came from the Wuhan lab in China? And, you know, everywhere you look, you see the black hand of the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, you see it in the the global warming scam where China is funding radical environmental groups. You see it in the solar panel and wind farm scam where China's funding environmental groups that demand solar panels and windmills, all of which are made in China. Meanwhile, China's the biggest polluter on the planet, if you consider all of the particulate matter that's released into the air by China's coal-burning power plants. So everywhere you look, China is meddling. You know, we're Swiss cheese, Jesse. I mean, we're an open society, and China is burrowing into every possible nook and cranny of our society to cause unrest, dissension. And what they would like to do, what they would like to see is quite frankly, civil war in the United States, because that would greatly weaken us and enable them to pursue their plans for global domination without opposition. We can't allow that to happen.
Stephen, Trump came out recently and said on camera that he wants all these hundreds of thousands of Chinese students to keep coming here. But Trump is no idiot, especially when it comes to China. He knows what they're doing. He knows why they're doing it. So please connect these dots for me, because I can't make sense of it.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned that we're not hammering China harder at this point in time. We should be, because China's in increasingly desperate straits, right? We've taken away a large part of the export sector of the economy from them. They've got no domestic consumption. Their birth rate is down. They're averaging one child per couple, over a woman's reproductive lifetime. The population of China by the end of the century will be smaller than that of the United States of America, because China, the Chinese Communist Party, has killed off China's future, killed off the China dream. We ought to be encouraging China's collapse. And instead, a word from the White House is that we're interested in arranging a kind of soft landing for the Chinese economy, so we don't want to hit them too hard on tariffs. We don't want to pressure them too hard in other areas, because we don't want the chaos and catastrophe that would result from a total collapse. Well, that's exactly what I want. I want a total collapse of the Chinese Communist Party. I want different factions to begin openly fighting against each other. I want a warlord situation in China, which is what followed the fall of the Manchu dynasty back in 1911. I want China broken up into provincial-sized pieces where possibly in the interstices freedom can grow and the Chinese people can enjoy more human dignity and respect for their human rights. That's what I want. I want to encourage the collapse of China, because the collapse of China will be good not just for the Chinese people, but for the world at large.
Stephen, how secure, we've talked about this before, about the Xi Jinping and not necessarily having as much of a hold on power as seemed to think, kind of on shaky ground. What do we think about this situation?
Well, I think people need to understand that the largest political organization on the planet, which is to say the Chinese Communist Party with 95 million members, is not a unified whole. It is a giant mafia. With different factions, with different mafia families, dating back to the Long March and the people who rubbed shoulders with the late Chairman Mao Zedong. Those families, those elite families, and their sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters control large swaths of the country of China and large parts of the economy. And Xi Jinping has made enemies everywhere. He has attacked all of the other leading families, the families of the former presidents, the families of the former Communist Party leaders. And so I think that opposition to Xi Jinping is building up, especially as he gets older, and that factional fighting could break out in open attempts on his life, which seem to have happened once or twice in the last couple of years, and unrest in more remote provinces like Guangdong. We ought to encourage that. He's now the mafia dons, are called the leading mafioso is called the capo de tutti capis, right? The chief of all the chiefs. Well, he's now a chief of many chiefs who hate him and would like to see him removed. Think of the movie The Godfather. That's what's going to happen in China.
What's the military situation like? And I ask this because if you're going to topple a dictator, you better have some guns on your side to do so. Are there generals involved in all this?
Well, it's very interesting that Xi Jinping has removed more generals that he has promoted in the last few years than any previous communist dictator, going back to Hu Jintao, who removed none, and Jiang Zemin, who removed none. So in other words, some of the same people that he pinned 4 stars on a few years ago, he has now cashiered, he has now arrested, they have now disappeared, some have been killed. So what is that all about? Is that a movement by Xi Jinping to stamp out unrest in the ranks of the People's Liberation Army and take out generals who are conspiring against him? Or is there a movement within the People's Liberation Army, perhaps led by the vice chairman of the Central Military Commission, who turned his back on Xi Jinping at the last meeting of the Communist Party, turned his back on the leader of China, removing Xi's allies within the military? We're all watching to see what happens next. But clearly, there's a lot of division in the People's Liberation Army. And remember the last breakdown of order in China. The fall of the Manchu dynasty began when the military garrison commander in the central city of Wuhan rebelled against the Manchu leadership in Beijing. And then the country fell apart into 20 years of warlordism. That could happen in China.
That'll be interesting to watch. Not that I'm rooting for it or anything like that. Stephen, thank you so much, sir. I appreciate you very much. We have final thoughts. Next. It's not easy to hear a lot of this when we talk about terror cells, people dying, the prospects of more of this coming. I know you're not celebrating, and it's not one of these things you watch and you stand up and cheer at the end. I understand that, but we have to understand where we are and why we are where we are. And we can come out of this. You can defeat these insurgencies. You can. It's going to take focus. It's going to take time. And there are going to be casualties. It sucks, but it's where we are. We'll stay on it. Talk to you again.
This is an iHeart podcast.